and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
Actually, according to Educational Decree 52, we're no longer allowed to read.
Roger.
Or like things, or anything.
Well, in that case, I'm just going to turn this off and go watch TV.
Go watch the TV. Do wizards have TV?
Do they have wizard telly?
Oh my god, so many questions.
What kind of programming would they have?
I don't know, probably dumb stuff. Because wizards are like, I feel like sometimes the wizarding world is like so quirky, like how can real people live in it? But I guess they're in a book and not real.
They would be fascinated by YouTube tutorials of people doing mundane things.
Like, how to fry an egg, and Mr. Weasley's like, oh my shit! He would be, like, awake all night watching YouTube videos, like, freaking out. Anyway. So, this week, we read Harry Potter and the Order of
Got a little bit of a feedback delay going on there.
Read Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix by J.K. Rowling. Or as Rhea likes to call it...
I call it Harry Potter and the Anger Management Issues. Or also Harry Potter and the Failure to Communicate.
Which is the one we like.
I like that one.
Yes.
Yeah, it works very well. Yeah, so this week our guest star, co-star, friend, person... Is Rhea...
I like being a guest star. It makes me feel important.
A star.
You can be a star.
She's a star.
You're a star.
She's Skyping in all the way from Boston, so...
Technically Cambridge. Oh. It's very important to people here, apparently.
Okay. So it'd be like if someone's like, oh yeah, you're from Kansas City, and they're like, I'm from Overland Park, kind of thing. Yeah.
Kind of, yes. Let's go with that.
Except people here, it's like, whatever, I'm from Kansas City.
But with lesser known universities.
Yeah. No one cares. That's the difference. So we read the book for Harry Potter Cast Extravaganza. Woo! If you haven't figured that out yet, then you're dumb. I mean, honestly. And I'm not going to go over the genre or point of view or anything, because...
Or who wrote the book. Did J.K. Rowling write this one, too?
No, actually, I think Stephen King wrote this
one. I think it was Robert Galbraith.
Is that her pen name?
That's her... Have you been listening to the news? That's her pseudonym for her crime novel.
I knew she wrote it under a pseudonym, but...
Yeah.
I didn't know what the dude's name was.
Sorry, I work in publishing, so I get all the publishing news.
It's your job to know these things.
A bunch of people on our Twitter feed were talking about that, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I knew it happened because of that. I just didn't pay close enough attention to know that was the name.
I was like, I still haven't read The Casual Vacancy, so I can't really care yet.
Haven't you had that book for, like, 7 years?
Yeah, Jessica lent me that book in December, and I read the first 2 or 3 chapters and have not picked it up since. Mm. So, woo! It's no Harry Potter, that's all I'm gonna say. All
right.
Okay, so our plot synopsis for this week...
Umbridge rules the school and Fun is dead.
Yeah.
Poor Fun.
My plot synopsis was Umbridge is literally worse than the Holocaust.
We had a lot of ideas, most of them involving Umbridge being horrific.
I'd also like to state for the record that my real opinion is not that she is worse than the Holocaust. I don't want anyone to mad at me for that.
You don't want anyone to take Umbridge with that?
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, names.
Oh, yeah, right. Umbridge and Pensieve are two of my top ones in this
Pensieve,
series.
Yeah. I like that Lupin turns into a werewolf. I actually had the conversation with Scott the other night. I says, Lupin turns into a werewolf. And Scott says, does he turn into a werewolf or a werewolf? And I was like, fuck you.
Depends on how full the moon is.
The only way that his name could be a more obvious hint is if he were twins that turned into werewolves.
Yeah, if he had a twin named Romulus. Romulus Lupin. Right. Yeah, totally. Yup. So, shall we just live? Why can't I talk? You talk. Someone else talk.
All right. Looks like it's my podcast again. So why don't we just dive into the cast of characters?
Thank you.
And we'll begin with Miss Dolores Umbridge.
Dolores Umbridge.
Worst character in the history of action. She's a pretty good character. She's just maddening.
Good character, terrible person.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's not surprising if you've read the books, but if you talk to people who have read the books and you ask, you know, oh, what do you think of book 5? Or which character do you hate? People never say Voldemort. They always go, oh man, Umbridge is the worst. It's like Voldemort's out there murdering innocent people nonstop, and Umbridge is the one everybody hates.
We spent so much time with her.
I mean, she is horrible
Whereas
person.
Voldemort is like the distant dark threat.
Right. Voldemort's kind of just the general evil guy.
Yeah. It's like the shadow is approaching and winter is coming and whatever series you prefer. And that's Voldemort.
Well, not only that, but he at least has the decency to embrace his evil. Umbridge pretends to be good, which makes her worse.
That's true.
Yeah, she's the self-righteous type of evil.
Yeah. And she's also a horrible teacher! Damn it!
We're gonna learn the theory of defense against the dark arts.
Well, and it's not like she even talks to them about the theory, which could help.
Right.
She's like, read chapter 1 and take notes, and that is the lesson for the class.
And how dare you actually ask a question about the subject material?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Oh, it makes me so, like, I imagine every teacher who reads this book must just be like, duh. The pain.
Yeah.
What about Umbridge, I guess? We've just talked about how we all hate her, but, like, not that much about her. So what's her deal? Why do we hate her?
Well, she's put in a position of authority, kind of, almost right away, and abuses the hell out of it, to my way of thinking.
Yes.
She's trying to tightly control the school through, you know, means that I usually oppose, like censorship, and trying to disband public groups so people can't meet without her express permission, and doesn't allow any alternate viewpoints.
She basically hates the First Amendment of the Constitution.
Right. Or whatever the English version of it is.
Yeah, whatever the... Oh, wait, we had to create the Constitution because of the English.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snap, mad British burning. Right, and then she's just so tied into the ministry's way of thinking and using that force behind her that she just won't even consider anything else.
Yeah, and some of the means that she's willing to use to back her views up. I mean, when she gives... Before she's the High Inquisitor and kind of the... I mean, almost the de facto headmaster.
Yeah.
Before she is then literally the headmaster.
The headmaster.
And she has Harry in detention and doing lines with a quill that writes using his own blood and causes... And not just, like, his blood is appearing in the pen, which would be creepy and weird, but is terribly painful to write with.
Well, getting etched into the back of his hand.
Right.
As he writes it on the paper.
Right. And for that matter, even that she's... making him write, I mustn't tell lies, when she has to be aware that something is going on, even if she doesn't believe Voldemort is actually back.
Yeah, is the ministry just in denial and they know what's up, or do they legitimately believe that Harry and Dumbledore are crazy?
You would think they would have to have convinced themselves that Harry and Dumbledore are crazy, because Voldemort's such a big threat that if they had even an inkling that it might be true, they would at least not be, you know, completely insane about it like they are in this book.
Yeah, I mean, they do mention that Fudge is so desperate to hold on to his power that he's basically willing to overlook anything. Oh, 12 Death Eaters escaped from Azkaban. I wonder how that happened. Yeah, who knows?
Must have been Sirius Black.
Must have been Sirius Black.
Yep. Well, they rig up a show trial against Harry.
Yeah.
Where the goal is clearly to convict him regardless of what the evidence actually is, just to silence him, more or less.
Yeah.
And that he gives Umbridge all this power over Hogwarts where she might be doing legitimate damage to an entire generation of young wizards. Especially because their subject matter seems to be a lot more relevant than the subject matter we got at the same age for our education.
Yeah, like, not learning Defense Against the Dark Arts could actually lead to student deaths.
Right. And probably the only reason it doesn't in this book is because Harry is teaching it instead.
Because Harry's like, what up?
Yeah.
Well, really, Hermione was like, what up?
Well, yeah. To be fair.
But Harry is the one who teaches it.
Yeah, I'll give Harry credit for actually being a good teacher, even though it was totally Hermione's setup.
Yeah, Hermione's idea. But, you know, it's cool.
What else? I mean, I think the main thing is with Umbridge is that she's just so self-righteous, and you spend a lot of time with her.
Yeah.
She's all over the place, and almost every time she appears, she's stomping on someone's freedom or fun or both.
She's just all up in everyone's business.
She's just being quietly, consistently oppressive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in those
classrooms... With the cats on plates.
And in the classrooms, like, following the teachers around while she's doing her evaluations.
Yeah, interrupting them and...
I mean, teachers... In real life, teachers do have administrators wander in and do administration... Or administration. Do evaluations every once in a while. But they kind of quietly sit in the corner and just observe.
That's what I was going to say, is we've had... I have seen evaluators in the room before, but I've never actually heard any of them talk. They just sit there quietly and write.
Right. And I was surprised more of the teachers weren't giving her the contemptuous, you are scum, not even worth responding to, treatment that McGonagall gives her when she's in her classroom.
Oh, McGonagall.
Yeah.
All the Umbridge-McGonagall exchanges in this book, I said earlier in the week, deserved an outstanding owl. Because they're awesome.
So, shall we hit some other characters
here? Yeah. Luna.
Yeah, Luna.
Luna Lovegood.
Or...
Isn't her last name perfect for her?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
She does love good.
She does. She's supposed to be... Well, she kind of... I shouldn't say supposed to be. She actually is a weirdo. But in
she
a,
is a weirdo.
But in a really charming way.
Yeah.
I really enjoy her. And to the degree that when... I guess when people say... Refer to her as Loony Lovegood, they mean it as an insult, but... I almost think of it as like a pet name at this point.
An endearment. Aw, Loony.
Hey, Loony, what's up?
Yeah, she's always kind of vague, apparently, in her way of speech. She always kind of seems like she's not 100% there.
A little spacey.
Yeah. And she is not 100% good on social tact, although... There are a lot of characters in this book who aren't great at that, so I guess that's
Well, they are teenagers.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, Harry and Ron are both pretty bad at that. Ron's awful at it.
Ron's just not very sensitive.
Oh, Ron. You're ruining things. And one of her most outstanding characteristics is that her dad runs the Quibbler, which is supposed to, I guess, be like a wizarding tabloid type of magazine. But it's also, well, I guess it's more of a conspiracy theory magazine.
That's probably,
and not a tabloid.
That's probably closer, yeah.
Yeah, I, like, if Luna was a muggle, she would believe in Bigfoot and stuff, but because she's a witch and those types of creatures exist, she has to believe in new creatures that don't exist.
Right. Things whose names I can't even properly remember.
Yeah, the Crumple horn
Snorklack, I think.
Something like that.
Just basically putting a lot of random sounds next to each other until it makes something that looks like a word.
Or
and she believes in it.
Or nargles.
Nargles.
In the mistletoe.
That's right. And she has some excellent headgear.
Yes.
Like, hey, Looney, bitchin' lion hat.
Yeah, for the Quidditch match.
That's amazing.
Or a giant raven hat.
Or a giant raven hat.
And they described it as just a, it looked like a raven sitting on her head.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's impressive. That's talent.
Yeah, she's apparently pretty crafty.
She kind of has a, yeah, she has a quirky fashion sense to go with her other weirdnesses.
And I guess people don't like her that much. Because there's this kind of sad scene at the end of the book where she's walking around putting up flyers because people just steal her shit from her, like, throughout the entire school year. And then she has to try and get it all back before she leaves for the summer.
It's a pretty low-key thing, though. I mean,
well, she deals with it well.
I was gonna say, it does suck. It's interesting because she's not, I'm surprised they keep doing it, I guess, because usually something like that would be the, hey guys, give it back, stop taking my stuff, can you gotta give that back to me, and instead she just lets it happen, and at the end of the year just puts on the flyers, okay guys, time to go home, I need my stuff back, and it all comes back
and
to her, apparently.
Back.
I guess they're afraid of what she might do if they don't give it back. Maybe she just follow them around until they gave it to her. That'd probably be bad enough to those people.
I don't know. She might not do anything, but Dumbledore probably, like, do something.
That's probably true.
I feel like he knows. Dumbledore always knows. He's like, well, I don't know.
Who's the head of Ravenclaw, anyway? Has that been addressed at this
Sprouse
point?
Is it Hufflepuff?
Is it Flitwick?
Is it Flitwick?
We're gonna Google this shit.
That's right.
McGonagall's Gryffindor, Snape is Slytherin. I mean, he's the other, like, big subject.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
It is Flitwick. Sorry.
All right.
It is okay. Flitwick.
That seems logical.
There we go. Problem solved.
Yeah, maybe he'd be the one in charge of doing something about it.
Flitwick charm everybody into
right.
Doing whatever.
Tries like the return shit that isn't yours charm or something.
Return shit that isn't yours charm.
Only in Latin.
in fake Latin.
Return a kiss, shittus. That's the spell.
Oh dear.
Oh dear.
So
you talk about the other students.
Yeah, I think that'd probably be the thing to do. So Cho Chang, throw the romantic interest.
Cho Chang. Also a Ravenclaw.
Also a Ravenclaw. She's sad.
She's a sad person. Yeah, I don't remember if we talked about her in book four, but she had been dating Cedric, so now, you know, that's bad, because Cedric's dead.
Rumor has it.
As
The Ministry of Magic doesn't believe it, though.
They believe he's dead.
I know, I was making a joke.
It's not even, I don't.
It's funny, because he's dead.
Shut
that's
up.
Actually not why it's funny, it's because they don't believe things that are obvious.
Okay. Jesus.
So Cho Chang.
So she's sad, sad that Cedric's dead, but she also likes Harry for some reason.
Right.
Which I was saying I didn't understand earlier, because Harry's a big old dumb.
He's a clueless young man.
But he's apparently cute or whatever, so...
Yeah, well. He has a certain...
And mildly famous.
Well, that probably doesn't hurt. He has a bit of an aura about him, yeah.
Although in book 5, he's kind of famous for a bad reason.
Well, he's more infamous in that book.
Although Cho believes him.
That's true.
So...
So they kind of do the awkward teenage flirty thing for a while, and then they
kind of try to date,
kiss once, and then have a spectacularly unsuccessful date,
and
then they're done.
That's it. JK just wanted to make sure that Harry had one relationship in before he started dating the person he's going to marry. Yeah. That's my guess. I think she did that with each of the main characters. I have to date at least one other person, or else it's not realistic.
That's right. And Hermione already had her turn.
Yeah, in the last book, so... I guess our question for book 6 would be, is Ron going to get a girlfriend?
You better hope so. Ginny's already ahead of him.
Yeah, Ginny's already had 2 boyfriends or something. I was pretty impressed that she managed that. She snagged a boyfriend at the end of her 3rd year.
That's true, yeah.
I was like, dang, Ginny. Guess you're a hot commodity.
She must be.
Yeah, but in her 3rd year, she wasn't, you know, dealing with Dementors and Padfoot and all that. She was just going to school.
That's true.
She had more free time for dating.
She didn't learn that her pet rat of 13 years was actually a dude. So, to be fair.
Yeah, that'll...
She's had a little less going on. And, I mean, we can see Ginny's feistiness, which is possibly why she did snag a man.
Yeah, I enjoy Ginny's feistiness. I was... glad that it arrived.
Yeah. I think it takes a little too long to arrive, but it does finally arrive.
It would have been nice to see some of it maybe in book 2. Like, she could have been intimidated by Harry still, and then at the beginning of the school year, and then kind of gotten over that since they're in the same house and common room all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, Harry overhears enough stuff. Surely he could have overheard her with her friends at some point.
Right.
Yeah.
It's true. He does overhear, like, every conversation that happens in the school. She could have woken up in the Chamber of Secrets and been like, where is that asshole? I'll kill him! Yeah. Harry's like, whoa, you were almost dead.
He wakes up all fiery.
I don't give a shit!
You are 11. Why are you so intense?
I'm so pissed! yeah.
Fiery personality to match that fiery red hair.
Oh. I do feel kind of bad, though, for Ron, because I'm like, all your older brothers are, like, more accomplished than you, and now your little sister's turning into a badass. And Ron's just like, womp womp.
Ron's like, I'm loyal. Maybe I should have been a Hufflepuff.
I don't know. Is he good at finding things?
He's not good at finding a clue.
That's true. I still love Ron.
Still in the school. Fred and George.
Fred and George.
Who have, of course, been around for the entire
Gret
series.
And Forge.
Gret and Forge.
Who are basically still indistinguishable.
Yeah.
At this point.
But we haven't really talked about them yet. They're, of course, the Merry Prankster Weasley twins.
Oh, yes.
And in this book, they're devising a gigantic line of joke wizard products.
Uh-huh.
And generally performing some really difficult magic, but just using it for fairly non-serious ends.
Yeah, like, it's surprising how good they are at magic, because you would think, oh, they just want to open a joke shop, but all this stuff that they're creating is magic that other people don't know how to do.
Yeah, they're doing a lot of research, and they're very entrepreneurial.
Uh-huh.
Like, doing research. They're testing all these crazy products that, like, make you vomit and bleed and disappear on themselves. Their bedroom over the summer must have been a lively place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We always heard
explosions. I mean, at one point they even impress Hermione with their skills, even as she's like, oh, they shouldn't be doing this here in Hogwarts. She's like, but that's a really clever spell. I wonder how they did that.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Hermione doesn't know a spell.
I didn't think it was possible.
They must be geniuses. Yeah, I think Fred and George are a good example of how really smart people can still do bad in school.
Yeah, because, well, they pretty much don't care about school.
Yeah, they only pass three of their classes, but they don't even really care. Or three subjects, I guess, for their owl years. But owls are obviously not a measure in this case of how good they are at magic. So.
Yeah, they were studying for things that weren't relevant to the test, it sounds like. They also have
real life experience.
They also have a great exit from the school.
Yeah, well, I mean, all the shit.
Possibly the best
is the best.
Oh yeah, I mean they they decide that don't really care about school that much, and they're just gonna make Umbridge's life as miserable as possible until they get expelled. And they do a pretty damn good job of it,
they
too.
They do.
And the teachers help them do a good job of it by not stopping them.
Yeah.
Yeah, the teachers do that thing where they don't actively help them, but they just go limp.
Yeah. Oh, that's going on. That's fun.
Oh, quick, somebody send Umbridge down here. There's a firework in the shape of a bird flying around my classroom.
There's a firework spelling out the word poo.
That's right.
But I can't do anything because it's not related to my subject. I don't know what to do.
That's right. The decree says we can only talk about things directly related to our subject.
Yeah, like I also liked how the teachers were giving Harry points for, like, Sprout gave him 20 points for handing her a watering can.
Yeah, right.
Because they weren't allowed to talk to him about facing Voldemort and all that stuff. Yeah, it was pretty fantastic.
So, we have a couple other characters on our list that I think we're not going to say a whole lot about, but...
Yeah.
We have Tonks, the quirky, hip, young, and inquisitive Order of the Phoenix person. What's a better way to say?
Order of the Phoenixer.
She's an Auror, isn't she?
Yes.
She is, yeah.
And she was a Hufflepuff.
Oh, that's right.
So... good example of how Hufflepuffs can be...
Hooray for Hufflepuffs.
Good. She's clumsy, but, well, whatever. We'll move past that.
Yeah.
She can make her hair pink on Will, so she's pretty cool.
That's right.
And Neville's clumsy, too, and we all know, you know, what we think of Neville.
He's awesome.
So clumsy is actually probably a positive attribute.
She makes characters clumsy when you're supposed to like them.
Clumsy is a sign of being a total badass in this universe.
Is that Harry's athletic ability makes him a loser? God, Harry.
Yes, I think that must hold true. And we have Creature the Cranky House Elf.
Yes.
Who mostly just seems to be upset to have to be helping people that his old master, Sirius's mom, wouldn't have approved of.
Yeah, I guess this is really the first book where we learn that Sirius came from a line of pure-blooded wizards who were super into being pure-blooded and rich and all that crap and thinking themselves above everyone else. Because I don't think we really knew that before about him and his family.
Yeah.
And Creature is totally a byproduct of that kind of family. You know, he doesn't respect the people in the house because they're muggleborns or they're blood traitors or whatever else kind of bullshit racist people say in the wizarding world.
Right.
And everyone basically hates him because he's just kind of gross and grouchy.
Yeah.
Except for Hermione. She tries to be nice to him, but...
That's true, but he doesn't really want her to be nice to him.
Yeah.
Or to be around at all, honestly. Yeah. And so, yeah, he ends up leaking, I guess, some information that leads to some of the bad stuff.
At the end, yeah.
But I don't know, like, considering where he's coming from, I almost can't blame him.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much treated like shit, so why should he want to do good things for these people?
Exactly, he's unpleasant, but he has no motivation to be loyal to anybody other than magic!
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 And then Bellatrix Lestrange, who's just a...
bitch.
Zealous bitch.
Not that I want to, you know, put female characters into that box of being a bitch, I guess. But the thing I found incredibly obnoxious about her is her that fucking baby voice she used. I was actually glad when Harry crucioed her. Like, goddamn, shut up.
It's like, is that a thing that adults do, seriously?
Oh, little baby Potter! I was like, really?
It's like, I would have crucioed really? That bitch, too.
Condescending asshole.
I wouldn't even done that. I would have thrown the wand down, and it would have been face-punching time.
Started punching the shit out of him. You know, we were talking about how Draco needed to get punched in the face more,
yes.
And he totally did in this book.
That's true.
Because George and Harry punched him in the face a bunch.
That's true.
Harry could have done the same thing. Although apparently she's really awesome at magic because she manages to get rid of Tonks, who he said is an Auror,
mm-hmm.
and kill Sirius, who's also an experienced duelist.
Yep.
She does that on her own. So she's got to be pretty powerful in her own right.
She's legitimately strong.
Yeah, even though she's annoying. But we don't get to see that much of her yet, so maybe there's more to her than that.
Yeah, and she's the one, she stands out because she's one of the few Death Eaters who were loyal to Voldemort even after he disappeared the first go-around.
And she's, like, the token female Death Eater.
Yeah, I guess the rest of the Death Eaters just have Voldemort-leaning wives, but none of them are actually Death Eaters themselves.
Exactly. Like, they're all like, well, that's cool, I guess I believe in it too, but I'll just, like, take care of the kids or whatever. I guess.
I guess? Maybe we'll see more of that later.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to issues.
All right. Well, we can start with some wizard racism again, I think.
We have even more new forms of wizard racism. So we've already talked about the, you know, muggle-born crap, and that is definitely still an issue in this book. We talked about werewolves and house elves, and now we get into the issue of giants. That's the new racism issue in this book.
Yeah, and, well, just for example, Umbridge goes into Hagrid's class to watch him teach, him being a half-giant, and she treats him like a complete idiot. Like, he's speaking normally, and she's using the ugly American tourist voice on him, essentially.
I can't understand you.
It's like, he just said what is wrong with you? You're hearing what you want to hear, which is babble, because you don't believe someone with giant blood could actually speak English.
Well, that totally reminds me, actually, one of my, Saeed, when he worked for a bank in Colombia. A guy pulled her on the drive-thru, and he, you know, hello, sir, how can I help you today? And the guy said, what? I can't understand you. Put someone on who speaks English. And Saeed, as you guys have heard in the last podcast, speaks completely coherent English.
Completely coherent English with an American
with
accent.
With no trace of accent whatsoever.
Exactly.
And he was like, okay. it's like the same thing.
Yeah. And then you see it again applied to centaurs at the end, when Umbridge is very intelligently standing in the middle of a herd of angry centaurs and calling them
creatures of near human intelligence.
Yeah.
Oh, you fucking idiot.
Frankly, she's lucky they didn't just tear her into pieces right there.
Yeah.
Which we would have celebrated.
The centaurs just quartered Umbridge and cut off her head. Yeah, well, whatever.
You call them filthy half-breeds, and they just put, like, 12 arrows straight into her chest.
She'll probably be fine.
Well, 11 of them didn't hit anything vital because it's hard to find her tiny shriveled black heart. But the 12th one drove home. Down she went.
Thar she blows.
Thar she blows.
We also get introduced to a giant in this book, Hagrid's half-brother Grop, who is a runt of a giant at like 18 feet tall, I believe.
Yeah, and he, well, he kind of is a brutish character, but at the end he actually does seem to have forged some kind of connection.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I think one of the things, one of the good points brought up earlier in the book is when Hagrid's talking about how there used to be a bunch of different tribes of giants spread out, and then they all got forced to live in the same place and far away from wizards, which Dumbledore thought was a bad idea. And, you know, if he thinks it's a bad idea, it is, because, like I said, Dumbledore knows all. And they're just not meant for living in close quarters, so they all kill each other off. So people just think they're these violent, brutish creatures. But they seem to have their own language, and, I mean, they do elect chieftains based on, like, who kills who, but it's kind of like a, you know, like a wolf alpha system kind of thing. I mean, it's not human, but that doesn't make it
Yeah, there's a lot of violence. Bad. There's a lot of violence in their culture, but it's hard to say that it's necessarily unthinking, animalistic, no context whatsoever type of violence.
Yeah.
If that matter, animalistic might not even be fair, because if you're going to compare it to a wolf pack like you did, that's violence with a purpose.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
So, there's also a thread of bullying running through the whole series, really.
Yeah, we've been bringing it up time and time again, but there's a particular scene in this book that puts bullying in a new light.
Yeah, so Harry manages to see one of Snape's old memories of Snape being dangled upside down and tormented by Sirius and James, Harry's father. And it certainly seemed unprovoked, because all he was doing was kind of being Snape at the time.
Just being Snape.
Like, he was just sitting over there reading. Yeah. By himself. And then one of, you know, Sirius or James was bored.
Yeah.
And the other one was like, hey, look, there's Snape. Let's father him.
Let's fuck with him. Yeah, I think Sirius said, I'm bored. And then James like, hey, look, it's Snivellus.
Snivellus.
Which, I was like, guys, you're horrible at nicknames. Stop, please. That's so dumb. Especially when Sirius...
Are your feelings hurt, Snape, listening to his japes, Snivellus?
When Sirius uses it, like, as an adult, yeah. I was like, fucking grow up.
Exactly.
God damn.
That did seem very childish.
But Sirius got issues.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this scene where James is bullying Snape, like, pretty much just because they were bored and just being a general show-off.
Yeah.
And then Harry has this huge crisis of, everyone keeps telling me I'm like my dad, and apparently my dad was a huge twat.
That scene was disappointing.
Yeah.
And I was glad that Sirius had the decency to be kind of embarrassed about it initially when Harry asked him about it. And then I thought the explanation he gave was maybe slightly a little glib, but at the same time probably accurate, saying, yeah, we were moron 15-year-olds and we outgrew it. Because that does happen.
Yeah, I did like the point Harry made, though, when they said we were 15, and he goes, I'm 15.
Right.
I don't do that
shit. Bullying people.
Yeah, rather than bullying people, he's sitting there going, but the way they treated Snape is the way I've been treated. Hang on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's not okay. I've been treated that way by Snape.
Yeah, well, and being 15 certainly doesn't make it okay to bully people, but being older than 15 and looking back on it and going, yeah, that was kind of a not our best example of us.
Not cool, man.
I think is also... I think most people feel that way about being 15.
Like, if you could just show someone 5 minutes from your life, you would not show them a scene from when you were 15.
Yeah.
Why don't we look at when I did something cool?
We'll see a defining moment of how awesome I am as a person. Well, here's my age 15, everything.
Here's me bullying a guy for no reason.
That's right. And here's an awesome story I wrote when I was 15.
Oh, God. Read my fan fiction. It's great.
So bad.
Oh, so bad. The pain. Yeah, and I mean, they do explain it more or less and say that James, I mean, he did end up fighting against Voldemort and stuff, but because we don't really get a scene of him not being a douche, I'm still kind of left with a bad taste in my mouth about James.
Right, because we don't really know what he is. I mean, a lot of people seem to think he was pretty wonderful.
Yeah. And we see 15-year-old Lily telling him he's a fucking jackass.
Deservedly. I know, I came away from that scene liking Lily a whole
yeah,
lot.
Yeah, Lily's great.
She's standing up for Snape. Good for her. Alright, well, moving along, how about some of the politics?
Yeah.
We mentioned the show trial and Umbridge being part of her unlikability being due to her basically rock-steady political views and not willing to hear anything that disagrees with them without being enraged.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of the Ministry trying to meddle with stuff in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So their hardline policy of Voldemort's not back, let's discredit anyone who says otherwise type of machinations, actually putting Umbridge in Hogwarts and letting her take over it, which is definitely a political move when all of the young wizards in England are getting educated at that school.
Right.
And then their control of the newspaper, which I think the Daily Prophet's kind of shit in general, but still, they are censoring it.
Yeah, you almost wonder why, because I don't know why anyone takes it seriously. Oh, the Daily Prophet's here. What's it say? Who cares?
It says, wah, wah, wah.
Yeah, it's full of...
Well, it does appear to be pretty much the only source of news in the wizarding world.
Yeah. That's bad.
That's how you can tell they don't
it's
have...
terrible.
Wizard telly.
Like, I mean, I know people say rude things about journalists, but I think the wizarding world needs better journalism. And like 3 or 4 newspapers, maybe.
I would argue the wizarding world doesn't have journalism. It's not even bad journalism. It's just they don't even know what they're supposed to be doing. And yeah, I mean, it's just using some tactics that those of us... Well, especially those of us who grew up in democratic societies tend to frown upon.
Oh, yeah.
You know, controlling or at least influencing the media. Not that that, you know, has never happened here, right?
Also, how does the Minister of Magic get elected?
Sounds like he applies for the job, almost. I don't know.
Does the general population, or is it like... officials at the Ministry?
No one knows.
Because that's another political thing.
I need to read me a wizard constitution.
They probably have one, but it's like really quirky and stupid.
I'm sure it's completely worthless.
According to the poop and pee resolution of 1621, all wizards have to use a chamber pot. Damn it, wizards! Stop that. They should have a government class at Hogwarts.
They should. Wizard civics. And more specifically, within the realm of politics in this book, there's a lot about education.
Yeah.
In probably some comments on what education shouldn't be.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, I don't think I was the person who made this point, but the idea that Umbridge, who's never taught in a school, and, you know, Snape's been there for 16 plus years, and McGonagall's been there for 40 years, Umbridge, who has no experience, comes in and becomes the High Inquisitor and starts getting to make educational decrees and judge her fellow teachers and decide who's worthy of teaching. I think that was you, Rhea.
I think it was. I think I kind of noticed throughout the book that... Sorry, I'm getting feedback and it's distracting me. Okay, I'm better now. I noticed throughout the book that it's the people who aren't qualified at all making the judgments of the people who are qualified. Mm-hmm. Which is just never a good idea, because they don't know what they're talking about.
And if you look at how... I actually don't know how it works in Britain, but education laws in America are basically decided upon by random lawmakers who aren't teachers. It's kind of the same
deal. Oh, yeah, deal. I mean, you don't have to have educational experience to be elected to the Board of Education.
Yeah.
In fact, it probably preferred that you don't, from what I've seen.
It probably hinders you, because then you'll want students to learn things.
Then you'll be biased in favor of learning.
Oh, there you go. In favor of teachers. You'll think teachers deserve money and stuff, which we all know is stupid.
We can't have students learning things from teachers who are good at their jobs and want to stay in them.
Guys, everyone knows teachers are totally worthless. They basically just babysit, okay? Oh my god.
You're
disclaimer,
right.
We're all being really sarcastic.
Yeah. Yeah. That stuff makes me so mad.
Let's just sack them all and replace them with televisions.
Oh lord.
Oh lord.
Baby Einstein.
Yeah. For the 11th graders, is at the level we'll be on by then.
Some good learning. Ah, maybe I probably would start homeschooling if that were the case. Even though that's for another day.
That's for a different podcast episode.
And then our last moral issue, which Rhea also brought up a good point about, was femininity and its representations in Book 5.
Yeah, I mean, I kept noticing that femininity, anytime someone was pointed out with feminine descriptions, such as things being pink or frilly at all, or there being cute animals on plates, for example, they kind of became a horrible person. Or, in a less extreme example, you know, giggling frivolous girls versus Hermione and Ginny, mm-hmm. who are presented as these... Hermione and Ginny are great, and Lavender and whoever, well, they're just off giggling.
Yeah, Lavender and Parvati.
And talking about boys.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of dumb girls.
Or, yeah, maybe even to a degree, Cho Chang and Marietta. Like her friend getting dragged to this class she doesn't want to be part of.
Yeah, because she needs to have one of her girlfriends be in the class with her.
Yeah.
Because girls always do things in groups.
Exactly.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then,
personally, I have someone sitting right next to me.
Just
I don't.
You were too afraid to podcast on your own, so you
yeah,
had to
do it.
Someone over.
They're on the other side of the camera.
Yeah, like
very
the,
quiet.
They've been keeping quiet for a long time. That's a good friend.
The fact that Umbridge wears pink and has kitten plates somehow makes her more evil.
It has that high-pitched voice.
Yeah, the girly voice that makes her terrifying.
And the bow in her hair.
Yeah. Well, apparently she's ugly, so it's okay to hate her.
Her toad-like appearance, yes.
She should have been, like, Vila gorgeous and then just been, like, a total asshole.
Yeah. No, because then she's not trying to hold on to the trappings of femininity. She just is, because she's gorgeous. But Umbridge is desperately grasping onto them.
Ah,
see.
Ah, there we're getting somewhere.
The nose knows. Okay, well,
I was actually just wondering if this book passes the, The Bechdel test.
Oh. It's hard because Harry's in every scene.
Yeah.
True.
So it would have to be one where he's just listening or watching.
I was going to say, the scene where Umbridge and McGonagall are fighting, but they're fighting about whether or not Harry's going to become an Auror. So technically, yeah. They're talking about a man.
Technically.
Although it's more of them just hating each other, but...
Yeah.
Move it right along. Any plot points that we need to talk about still?
All of them, because everything happens in this book.
That's true. This book is really fucking long, guys.
Well, we've touched... Well, as far as our list goes, we've touched on several of them. Dementors, okay. Harry rescues himself Dudley. And Dudley from Dementors. And the Dursleys are still dicks, because that's what they do.
That's how they be.
Followed by the show trial. And then he learns what the Order of the Phoenix is, which I guess we haven't really touched on too much.
Fight against but Voldemort.
Yeah, it's basically the people who are with Dumbledore and believe Harry. Umbridge, we've talked a lot about.
We can talk about Thestrals. They're important.
Yeah, they're freaky
skeleton horse
things. Yeah.
That and
you can only see them if you've seen death.
Yeah, and because I never do any research, do you know if that's actually a thing, or did J.K. Rowling make that creature up for the books?
I think the specific description she probably made up, but the idea of, like, a frightening black creature that you only see in some circumstance related to death is a pretty common thing, I think.
Yeah.
Usually it's presaging death, though, not because you've seen death.
Right, like the grim.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, so Harry sees the Thestrals for the first time because he watched Cedric die. Although I did wonder if his mom dying right in front of him should count, since he can hear that when the Dementors are close by. But
he was an infant.
Yeah.
And infants have, you know, no memories.
Right.
Although he does dream of that, doesn't he, at one point? Or am I making that up?
Well, in book three, when the Dementors are nearby, he can actually, like, hear his mom and dad, like, talking, you know, take Harry, go run upstairs, I'll try to hold him
up. Well, maybe he heard it but didn't see it.
Yeah. Maybe he's just a dumb baby.
Dumb babies.
Stupid Harry.
Come on, babies. Get it together.
Yeah, but Thestrals end up being really important because they fly Harry and company to the Ministry of Magic at the end of the book, so they're pretty handy to have around.
They're good at finding things. They must be Hufflepuffs. Dumbledore's army, which is Hermione / Harry's awesome dark arts defense group. Who totally makes a raid on the Ministry of Magic at the end.
Oh, yeah.
Harry, in this book, begins to see what Voldemort is seeing and feel what he's feeling at times.
Yeah, so the scar pain and some of the dreams he had in earlier books are amplified in this book. And we get introduced to... Do we decide it was Occlumency?
yeah, that sounds good.
Which is the practice of trying to shut people out of your mind who are trying to bust into it, more or less. And because Harry's not doing that, he can read Voldemort's moods, basically.
He's a mood ring for Voldemort, that's amazing.
Yeah. And so he sees all this stuff that's freaking him out, but it doesn't really get explained to him until the very end of the book. But I'd say the big important event is that he sees Arthur Weasley getting attacked by a giant snake and then sets up the alarm so he gets to the hospital in time. I think I actually remember reading somewhere that originally... Rowling had planned on killing Mr. Weasley off in book 5 when he gets bitten by the snake, but then she decided that she was killing off too many of Harry's father figures, and that wasn't nice. And she also actually made the point of, like, all of the father figures in the book are, like, fucked up in some way. Like, Sirius is a father figure, but he has issues. And Lupin's kind of a father figure, but he has issues. And James is dead, and Dumbledore's kind of a father figure, but, you know, doing his Dumbledore thing. And she makes the comment that Mr. Weasley's actually just a good dad. And she thought that he deserved to live because of that.
So I think that's fair. Yeah, I think that's a good reason to live.
So she didn't kill him off.
That well, that's good. That was
interesting, though.
I appreciate that.
Ways that J.K. Rowling is not like Germ.
Yeah. Well, like, all of the Weasleys would be dead by this point.
He would have murdered at least 5 of them by now. Including all of our favorite ones.
Yeah.
Percy would still be around.
Percy would be alive, and everyone would be like, fuck. God damn it, Percy. Idiot. And the other significant part of the attack on Arthur is they visit St. Mungo's to go see him, and we get the return of Lockhart.
Yes. In a comedic, yet...
tragic.
Kind of tragic, yeah.
I just felt bad for him.
A tragifarce?
Yeah, he's... still all busted up and can't remember anything. And then more horrible is they run into Neville and his parents, who have been in St. Mungo's for 16 years now, 15 years now.
Since shortly after Neville was born, basically. Yeah.
And that is sad.
Yeah, that was tough.
That's all of your feels right there.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's where, it's where Ron got to be not insensitive.
Yeah.
Made a, nobody left that scene feeling very good.
And Neville leaves it with just a little piece of wrapping, shiny wrapping paper.
Yeah, that his mom is giving to him. Apparently just giving him little pieces of paper and wrappers and stuff over and over again. It's one of her things.
Yeah.
So sad. And we talked about Gromp, and owls are their big fifth year tests that determine whether what subjects they can go on to study on a higher level.
The owl scenes were really fun. Yeah. It just reminded me of being in school.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I ever took a test like the owls.
Well, they're pretty stressful tests.
Yeah. Yeah. They're cooler than the ones we took.
Well, even disregarding the subject matter.
I had a couple...
they're pretty intense.
I had a couple like that in college that they gave the very... that the College of Music gave very reassuring names, like barriers. It's like, pass this test or don't go on to your junior year. That was a thing.
So
it's kind of like that.
I'm wondering if Harry and Ron... if the owls are demonstrating that Harry and Ron are good wizards in their own rights, so we can believe that they're not just getting along because they copy out everything off of Hermione.
Right.
Or do they only pass the owls because of Hermione?
Because she forces a study schedule on them and holds them to it.
What is the true meaning?
Maybe they just realize that they should listen to her. They've learned enough to know that, at least.
Well, I mean, allegedly they do learn things in class.
Yeah.
Aside from History of Magic. But, I don't know.
They got pretty good scores in the subjects they actually cared about, at least.
Well, we think.
Oh, well, I guess that's true. We don't actually know that.
Well, Harry gets an outstanding defense against the Dark Arts.
Yeah. Spoiler.
That's not even a spoiler.
Yeah.
The guy who's testing him is like, oh my god, that's, you're awesome.
That's true.
Like,
you can do a patroness charm, right? Yeah, well, why don't you show us? Yeah, amazing.
Everyone's clapping for him.
I guess it passed.
I guess they're pretty good.
Probably okay.
It was alright. And the Department of Mysteries, which is the last, 150, 200 pages?
Yeah, the last... yeah, almost, except for the postlude, I guess.
And in my opinion, which people are welcome to not agree with, I think the scene of the Department of Mysteries is possibly the best scene of all of the books up to that point.
I agree.
Fucking cool.
Yeah, there's so many interesting things going on. I mean, even just, like, the different rooms and the shape of the building and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the spinning doors. And then there's a tank full of brains. And then there's a giant hourglass. And
there's a freaky arch to oblivion in the middle of a room.
Like a random lecture hall or something. Like, I don't know what the fuck that is.
And that's before there's even a running magic battle.
We get in the Hall of Prophecy, which is just rows and rows of tons of prophecies, which is really cool.
Yeah.
I try not to talk about the movies really when we talk about these books, but I remember the end of movie 5, one of the reasons it made me so sad was because they just completely fucked up the Department of Mysteries scene.
Oh.
Which is, like, one of my favorite scenes in all of the Harry Potter books. And I was so excited, and then the movie's like, we're just gonna cut 90% of it out. And I was like, you are the worst.
If you just made that the movie, it would have been pretty good.
Stop failing at everything, movies!
If they were gonna divide any of the books into 2 movies, they should have been this one.
5 instead of 7?
There's so much stuff that happens.
Yeah, it's out of control. But, oh, go ahead.
Actually, you go ahead, because I was going to move past it.
Oh, I don't know. I was just going to say the Department of Mysteries is awesome. Really, honestly. I had nothing new to add.
No.
I just thought it was really cool.
Of course, I guess the kind of climactic part of that, well, I don't know. The climactic part of the battle was probably Dumbledore and Voldemort.
Voldemort, yeah.
Going mano a mano, but
that was really fun.
And that's after Sirius dies.
After Sirius dies, yeah.
Or gets, I don't know if he was killed and then fell into the arch, or if he's got knocked into the arch and then was dead.
She hits him with a jet of red light, so I'm assuming it was like a stunning something.
There have been so many such long discussions about what that was.
Sure there were.
Because it would have been it would have been green if it was a killing curse, so we know it wasn't that.
It wasn't even magic. She just pulled a flare gun on him. That's my theory.
Shot it's just a laser pointer.
That's my contribution.
Did she know what the archway was?
Does anyone know what the archway was?
No one knows what the damn arch is.
Yeah, because it's in the Department of Mysteries, so it's a mystery.
What is the arch? It's a mystery.
It's a mystery.
Why do you even have that thing? It's a mystery.
I just remember everyone being so mad because it's like, Sirius dies by falling through an arch? What the?
He falls through a curtain, and so he's dead.
Wait, what is that?
He's behind some tapestry.
And he can't get out again. That's bizarre.
Yeah, and so, and then in the whole thing at the Department of Mysteries turns out to have been yet another elaborate trap.
It's a trap!
In this case, one that is actually justified by the plot, even if you hate elaborate villain schemes, I think.
But this elaborate villain scheme wasn't nearly as elaborate as book 4.
I agree.
Voldemort's like, I just have to get Harry there so he can get the prophecy off the shelf.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't a whole lot of intricate planning. It was Voldemort discovering he has this connection going, I can use that for evil.
For evil.
For evil.
I also noticed that instead of pontificating when he sees Harry again, he's like, I'm sick of you. Avada Kedavra.
That's true.
And Dumbledore is the only reason Harry's bacon does not get killed.
Yet again.
Like, 5 times in a row.
It's because Dumbledore is doing some pretty high-level badassery in that scene.
Well, it also made me wonder, because you know they're saying that you can't block the Avada Kedavra? So, I mean, obviously a magical statue jumping in front of you works.
Right.
A phoenix swallowing the spell works.
Right.
So you can't do, like, a shield charm, I'm guessing?
That seems to be the case.
But you can use other things as shields?
Seems like there should be a better shield charm out there somewhere.
Sometimes the spells confuse me. Well, and, like, it's a stream of light, so you have to hit the person with it. So you can, like, miss.
Right.
I think that's interesting. You don't just have to, like, generally aim your wand and be like, you're dead now.
Right. It's like you're firing a magic bullet.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. A magic laser beam.
Yeah. And then in the aftermath of all of that, we find out what the prophecy actually is. And the key point of it seems to be that Harry and Voldemort...
They gotta battle to the death.
Can't coexist, yeah. One of them pretty much has to kill the other one or be killed.
The other key point is that Neville is awesome.
Right.
Stupefied.
No, because he was almost...
Harry.
The one with the scar.
Uh-huh. That's true.
I always love that. Because he's so unassuming up till this book. He's just Neville. He's kind of clumsy, but he's nice. Yeah. And in this book, he slowly becomes a badass.
He had his moment of courage at the end of the first book.
Uh-huh.
And then... But for the most part, he's just bumbling old Neville. And then, man, he is throwing... Jinxes and counter curses and stuff all over the room in that last
battle. And he is crazy brave. Like, he gets beat up in the battle in the Department of Mysteries and then just keeps going. He's like, Harry, come on, we gotta go over here. No, what? I'll carry Hermione. I know she's passed out.
I got her.
We got her.
He's like, go wait outside. And he's like, wait outside?
He can't even talk anymore and he's still fighting. He's
That's right.
Talking like he has no nose.
Every group needs a tank. Neville's the tank.
Neville's the tank.
He's tanking on in there.
Oh, Neville.
Taking damage, but just keeps going.
And, yeah, if you think about it, his past is just as tragic as Harry's, with his parents tortured into insanity and all that crap,
That's almost worse in some ways.
Because he has to go, and he sees it. He visits them. Yeah. So, yeah, it feels somehow worse.
Yeah, because Harry's just like, well, that sucks, but... That
he I doesn't never have to actually parents, go but... see his dead parents.
Yeah.
And Neville does have to face his parents who are basically living dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty awful.
At least he gets to be raised by someone who might possibly have his best interests at heart.
Well, yeah,
she's overbearing, but...
His grandmother does like him better than Vernon likes Harry, I suppose.
All right, so...
Themes.
Teenagers are idiots.
Yeah.
That's a theme of life. That actually has nothing to do
with
that's
me. Just a theme of the world. I would have been so offended when I was a teenager to hear that.
Yeah, right. Not every teenager's an idiot. You're all kind of
damn
idiots.
It.
You mean well.
It's so sad when you get older and you're like, I was... Damn it! Like, I thought I was cool.
It's like, I was smart, but I was an idiot.
I was a dumb idiot. Communication. As we said, Harry has problems communicating with people.
People have trouble communicating with Harry.
Yeah.
Well, it's Dumbledore's.
Dumbledore is pretty much MIA until the very end of the book, when you realize he should have been communicating with Harry.
Yeah.
We realize that Snape is also a poor communicator and... never should have been in charge of doing anything with Harry. Harry's bad at communicating. Ron and Hermione can't communicate with each other. All sorts of...
I think Harry Ron must be the only person Hermione can't communicate with.
Yeah, that's true.
They just bicker constantly. They're hilarious.
They are hilarious.
And because of this lack of communication, the whole book is shrouded in mystery.
Yeah, we have... I mean, the literal Department of Mysteries, and then the whole book, you're like, what the fuck is going on with everything?
I kind of have these ideas of, I kind of group these together, but fighting for the truth, standing up for what's right, kind of doing what's right versus what's legal.
Yeah, so Harry continuing to insist Voldemort's back, even though he gets punished for it. Creating Dumbledore's army to teach all these kids the spells that they need to know, even though it's against the rules. The Order of the Phoenix, for that matter.
Yeah, I mean, the Dumbledore's army group is essentially a small version of the Order of the Phoenix.
Is the teenage version of Order of the Phoenix, yeah.
And more Dumbledore Army people are raiding the Department of Mysteries and Order of the Phoenix folks. And
well, they end up showing up.
I know, they do end up showing up, but in slightly smaller numbers, actually.
And we have a little hint of fascism, mm-hmm. With Umbridge taking over the school, and it's fascism is bad, I guess I should say. The right. theme is not fascism!
Fascism!
So great!
Fascism rules!
Everyone do it!
Let's put on our brown shirts and march along. Excuse me, our brown robes.
Yeah, brown robes.
Yeah.
Swastikas.
Oh, I was aiming for a different form of
yeah,
fascism.
Yeah, I just realized that Nazis and fascists are not the same thing. Shut up. Alright.
Alrighty.
Points of interest.
Well, I wanted to mention Phineas Nigellus, a former Slytherin headmaster who hangs out in a portrait form to help out the current headmaster.
Yeah.
And he's he's a good example of why Slytherins don't have to be evil. He is kind of amused by the chaos that everything is soaked in, but he's still helping Dumbledore, mostly without legitimately complaining about it.
Yeah, and he does point out, in the few times he's able to talk to Harry, that Harry's being a dumb kid, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yes, that was appreciated. And true.
Yeah.
Harry, stop being such a you.
Also how Hermione is like terrifying when she wants to be, blackmailing Rita Skeeter and then coming up with the crazy hex for the contract for Dumbledore's army.
Yeah, and she
it really makes you glad that she's on the side of good.
Yeah.
Or and she bewitches all those fake galleons, and someone says, that's new level magic. Yeah. And she's like,
figure it
or
out.
Or when they pointed out, isn't that, that's kind of like a dark mark. And it's like, yeah, but it's not on your arm, so it's okay. Yeah.
I actually got the idea from that, so.
Just repurpose it for good.
Or at the end when she comes up with the plan of leading Umbridge into the forest. That pretty good thinking on her feet right there. Even though that didn't turn out great.
Yeah.
But she tried.
Okay.
Anyway. All right.
Let's get into the strengths and weaknesses of the
writing.
Yeah,
strengths and weaknesses.
It's long.
It is extremely
it's
long.
It's pretty long. It's the longest book by far. I did look up the word count, and it's the longest by a good 60,000 words.
For anyone who doesn't know, 60,000 words is the length of a novella. Almost a novel length. What's a good example of...
60,000 words is actually almost exactly how long Red Shirts is before the code is.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
To reference a previous podcast.
I'd say Gatsby's probably also...
Yeah, it's probably right around that.
About 60,000.
Yeah, it's about... 2/3 to half of your average commercial novel, probably.
It's long. That's long. So our thought, I mean, I couldn't think of anything specifically that I was like, that needs to be cut out because it's totally pointless. But there could be editing. Your book doesn't need to be an extra 60,000 words long, probably.
Probably.
Well, and... we had talked about how book one and two are really, really tight.
Yeah.
And particularly book two, everything that happens shows up again. And in book five, there's not quite that same everything that happens has a purpose later on or is connected to something else. There are a lot of callbacks to the earlier books.
Right.
But it is a little less purposeful. And it does drag its feet a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, the defense of it being long would be that there is a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff happens.
But, yeah, I would imagine a tight editorial hand could probably cut most of those 60,000 words out of there if they really wanted to.
We also, or Rhea also mentioned the all caps.
Shouty capitals!
Not as
not necessarily the best way to get emphasis across. Especially when Harry's just shouting for almost an entire page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that did get pretty, like, I just imagine him like, wah, rah, 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 rah. I was like, oh,
it's like frothing Lord. At the mouth.
Like, use a couple exclamation points, you're fine.
Right. Or maybe a comma, he shouted every once in a while.
A couple italics here and there. You're probably good. But he's angry teenage Harry, so he needs the all caps.
That's true.
That's the true sign of a teenager is typing in all caps on the internet. So
that's true.
She's just hip to the lingo.
That J.K. Rowling, she knows stuff.
With all that said, like we said, a ton of stuff happens in the book. Department of Mysteries is awesome. Umbridge, despite being infuriating, is a great villain.
Yeah, she is.
And a nice Voldemort substitute for most of the book. So,
all right. So some questions we are left with. What did the centaurs do to Umbridge? How'd she get out of there alive?
She appears to be physically unharmed, but traumatized.
Yeah.
What happened?
They battered her with their superior intellect.
And it frightens me. What the heck is that veil arch thing in the Department of Mysteries?
That bothered me so much that in my notes I had that question accidentally like three separate places.
That's good.
Because I want so badly to understand what it is. I just have to live. I have to live with it in this book.
Yeah,
it's just a mystery.
It's just there.
That's the thing we're gonna put in shouty capitals: is what is the arch?
What is the deal with that arch?
Yes. One of my other magic logic questions, of which I have many and will not list, but one of the big ones was how do pensives work? And I wondered that because I just imagine, especially when Snape came in and pulled Harry out. I went, is he literally reaching into that liquid and pulling Harry out somehow? Or is Harry just standing there in the room with his face in a bowl?
Yeah, inside your head, you've flipped over and you're living in the scene. But when someone walks in the room, they just see you neck deep in the bowl like a big old
like,
dope.
What the hell?
I really hope it's the second one because that just makes me laugh so much.
It is way
funnier. It is pretty good. What's that idiot doing with his head in a punch bowl? Get him out of there.
And then it's so ridiculous because they're literally soaking their head in that case.
Yeah.
It's great.
I want to know if Snape will ever stop being a dick because he's still a major asshole. Although apparently useful at the end when he was trying to contact people, but...
True.
Still a dick to Harry.
Enough of a dick that it never even occurred to Harry to go to him.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. That's not helpful. How will the wizarding world react to the truth about Voldemort? Now it's out. Now there's no way they can pretend he's not
that. Yeah, they've seen him.
Since he himself was running around their lobby for a while.
Hey, guys. That's
cool. Yeah, because I'm just so curious about exactly how much they'll freak out, how much they'll overcompensate, how the Daily Prophet will, you know, backpedal on that one.
There's a lot of...
Where there'll be political consequences for people like Fudge and Umbridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. To go completely in the opposite direction, I really want to know exactly, quantifiably, how much more awesome Fred and George can get.
On a scale from treacle tart to puking pastel, how much more awesome can Fred and George get? My vote is canary creams. We also wondered if that mirror that Sirius gave Harry is going to ever show up again. Since Harry was like, oh, cool, I'm talking to him in the mirror, and now he's dead, and then just threw it in his trunk.
It was almost cruel to bring it up.
I know, like, dude.
Yeah.
Rude.
It's like, let's just kick Harry while he's down. That's the only purpose for this mirror.
Yeah, basically, make him feel like shit.
On the bright side, you can look into the mirror and see your tears.
On the bright side. But that makes them feel better. So, our verdict, Rhea.
I liked it a lot more than I remember liking it, especially the very first time I read it when, you know, 2 hours after it came out type of thing.
Yeah.
Because I was a lot less emotionally invested now. And Harry annoyed me a lot less. So I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I remember being kind of frustrated by it a lot the first time I read it. I was also a lot more sympathetic to Harry. I saw him less as emo Harry and more as PTSD Harry.
Yeah, exactly. I distinctly remember talking about him as emo Harry at the time. Yeah. And I'm like, no, he's totally screwed up. He has issues.
He's traumatized.
Yeah, he's trauma Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I also felt more sympathetic to Harry's trials. And as I've said multiple times, the end of the book is really fucking cool, so I'm down.
So, yeah, what are you reading right now? Anything? I'm not.
Yeah, not us.
Unless the internet
counts. Mostly
unless the internet counts.
This is mostly for Rhea.
Yeah, I am, because I'm not doing the marathon for the Harry Potter cast. I'm reading, well, this week, once I finished Order of the Phoenix, I picked this advanced reading copy back up by Holly Black called The Coldest Girl in Cold Town, which is a YA book about vampires. Not usually my thing, but it's not Twilight. It's good. I'm enjoying it. And then I'm also listening to an audiobook called A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki, which I have no idea what I think of it yet, but I'm listening to it, so.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough.
It's happening, at least.
Yeah,
it's happening.
You guys finally get new book recommendations besides just...
What should we read? Harry Potter. I've read it 90 times. Read it 91. So, if you have any questions or comments or... you know,
whatever.
Other forms of feedback that can be put into words. You can send it to us on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
You can tweet us on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
Yeah, and if you can only find your feelings through song, you can totally post a song and then tweet us.
There you go.
@novelideaspod. And you can also find us on iTunes.
Also, if you can express your feelings in song, I will totally use that in its entirety for a music bump at some point. So, yeah, if you... so, do those things. Yeah, professionalism!
Yikes. Yikes,
that was bad. I can edit that out. But I probably won't, because it'll be funny. Next week.
I don't have anything to plug, but I will say I'm also on Twitter. I'm Rosencrantz.
Yay!
Yeah.
Yay!
@Rosencrantz.
Yes.
So you can tweet her, too, if she said something that you liked or disliked, or you want to tell her she's better than us and she should do the podcast instead of her.
From now on.
If you want to tell them that I should be back, feel free to do that, too. I mean, that's cool.
We'd probably allow it.
We'll allow it this time.
So, next time, we will be back with Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince.
With yet another guest star.
Yeah!
So, look forward to that.
Yeah! And I believe that is everything.
I agree.
All right, great. Then, we'll see you next time.
Bye!